This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Republican State Representative Eric Nesbitt is seeking re-election to the 66th District, which includes all of Van Buren County and Northwest Kalamazoo County. But first, we hear from an evolutionary evangelist. Reverend Michael Dowd says there doesn't have to be a divide between science and religion. He will speak tomorrow night at Portage United Church of Christ. His presentation is titled, The Future is Calling Us to Greatness, Climate as the Great Reckoning. Dowd spoke via Skype with WMUK's Andy Robbins.
You call yourself an itinerant evolutionary evangelist. What exactly do you mean by that?
Sure. I ended up pastoring three churches, three United Church of Christ congregations over the course of about a decade, from the mid-80s to the mid-90s. And then I did environmental sustainability and community organizing work for about 5 years. And then the last 12 years, Connie and I have traveled all over North America. We've spoken to close to 2,000, in fact, probably more than 2,000 groups at this point, of all different kinds. I mean, literally from evangelicals to atheists and everything in between. And what we focus on is the sacred side of science. We focus on sharing an ecological and evolutionary worldview, but focusing specifically on the practical and inspiring side of that. So my great mentor was Thomas Berry, and this whole universe story, what's now being called big history, but it's the epic of evolution is the way Edward O. Wilson spoke about it. But it's the history of everyone and everything, physical evolution, biological evolution, and cultural evolution as our first and only globally produced evidence-based creation story. And it gives us a far more reality-based understanding of the significance, the evolutionary significance of religion and how to move into a healthy future, how to move forward in a healthy way.
The whole topic of evolution is perhaps the poster child for conflict between science and religion. Got kind of a taste of that recently with some reaction to the reboot of the Cosmos TV series with Neil deGrasse Tyson. Can that gap be bridged between those who believe in the literal truth of the Bible or other foundational texts that try to explain how the world came to be and what science thinks actually happened?
No, I don't think it can be reconciled. Biblical literalism disses God. It basically says that God spoke all the cool, important stuff 2,000 years ago. And I don't think that you can possibly slander God more powerfully than that. I lift up evidential revelation that God has been speaking. And when I use the word God, I'm meaning nothing less than a sacred name of reality, that reality has been speaking to us very clearly for 400 or 500 years through all forms of evidence. So I see facts as God's native tongue. I see evidence as modern day scripture. And so God has been speaking very clearly that evolution is a fact, that global warming, climate change is a fact. Yes, there have been profound shifts in climate over the millions and even billions of years. But we now know beyond any shadow of a doubt. I mean, 99% now of scientists, climate scientists, agree that we, you know, 97% from between 2001 and 2012, it was 97% of climate scientists. But since then, it's now up to 99% of climate scientists agree that climate change is real, that humans are the main cause, and that we must take immediate action to avoid condemning our children and grandchildren to a literal hell and high water. So no, I don't think biblical fundamentalism, biblical literalism can be squared with or reconciled to, but I think biblical literalism is trivializing God and gospel both.
But so to that extent, then, you believe that science and religion do not have to be mutually antagonistic?
Absolutely. But if it sort of depends on what you mean by science and what you mean by religion. If what you mean by science is just sort of this mechanistic reductionism, well, yeah, that's it's tough to square that with the inspirational traditions of the world's great religious traditions. And if what you mean by religion is just supernatural otherworldlyism, well, then, yeah, that, it's tough to square that with science. But if you understand science as humanity's global collective intelligence in helping us to understand the two fundamental questions that humans have always needed to address, namely what's real or how things are, and what's important or which things matter, that our best global collective intelligence on that, if you understand science as the global community of people trying to come to a clearer understanding of that, then yes, I see that science and religion can actually be in a mutually enhancing relationship.
As implied by the title of your presentation in Portage, you see climate and climate change as the great awakening. Why?
Well, actually, I speak about it as the great reckoning, the great I think that we have been out of right relationship to reality. We've been out of right relationship to God. Part of that is because we've had a trivial, impotent notion of God. We've thought of God as only outside time and nature rather than incarnate or embodied or revealed or expressed in time and nature, as well as mystery, of course. And so when we no longer have a trivial notion of God, then it becomes clear. We've been out of right relationship to God. We've been out of right relationship to reality. And we're now about to experience the consequences. And that's why I say climate change is the great reckoning, where humanity has been out of right relationship to reality or God, and where we're now about to experience the consequences. And it's not because some supernatural being up there out there is pissed off at us and going to punish us. It's because we've been out of right relationship to reality, and there are costs, there are consequences of that. I do also believe that climate change will eventually be seen as the great homecoming. It's kind of like humanity is the prodigal species, that we've squandered our inheritance, that we're waking up in the pig pen, as it were. We're waking up to our predicament, and hopefully we're coming home to reality, to God, to the way things really, really are. And people sometimes say, well, how do you speak to fundamentalists and people who are in denial of climate change? And I say, I don't have to convert them. Their kids and grandkids are already starting to convert them, because they're basically saying, we have to live in this world. And your theology, if it's all about, you know, that we don't have to take responsibility for the world 100 years from now because Jesus is coming back, we see that as irresponsible. And so it's amazing how young people are impacting their parents and grandparents on exactly that issue.
You call yourself a climate hawk. What do you mean by that?
Climate hawk was a term I think coined at first by David Roberts, who did one of the most powerful TED Talks on climate I've ever seen. It's called Climate Change is Simple. David Roberts, he writes for Grist. And the remix is where they add music. So if you just put Climate Change is Simple remix, you'll get there. I can't recommend it too highly. I mean, Connie and I had our climate change come to Jesus moment watching that just under 2 years ago. But he coined the term climate hawk, and also climate patriot are two terms that are used, which basically for me means I am wholeheartedly, fully supportive of aggressive climate action, that we need to tax carbon. We need to put a fair price on carbon pollution and do so as soon as possible. And the idea that we still allow for the free or subsidized polluting of the commons is collective insanity. I mean, no corporation should be able to get wealthy by, toxifying the air, water, soil, or life upon which we all depend. And no corporation should get wealthy at the expense of future generations. It's just crazy. So I'm for aggressive action, putting a fair price on carbon pollution or taxing carbon or however you want to talk about it. I mean, my hero on this point is a Republican, Bob Inglis from South Carolina. He said it more succinctly than anybody I've ever heard. He said, this is a direct quote. He says, I favor a conservative approach that marshals the power of the market and doesn't increase the size of government. Here it is in a nutshell. Put all the costs in all the fuels and eliminate all the subsidies, and then watch the free enterprise system solve the climate and energy problem. And I just think he nails it. It's just exactly what we need to do. So I'm a climate hawk, as somebody who's enthusiastically in favor of that kind of thing.
To return to the subject of your views on science and religion, I gather from what I've read that your own personal journey has been, shall we say, interesting. Your Wikipedia entry, for example, says that you were originally a young Earth creationist, meaning you thought that you were among those who thought that the Earth has only existed for a few thousand rather than a few billion years.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I grew up Roman Catholic, but I had a born-again experience, a very powerful transformative experience in my teenage – actually, I guess I was 20 in Berlin, Germany. And I was discipled in a fundamentalist Pentecostal Assemblies of God context that was very anti-evolution. I thought that the end of the world was going to happen, that we'd never see the year 2000. This was back in 1979. And I read the Bible straight through twice like a book. And then another time I read it through, about five chapters a day for a year. and was very anti-science. And so, yeah, I've had a sort of a conversion, I guess you could say, my road to Damascus experience, where I, since 1984 at Evangel College, actually affiliated with the Assemblies of God, that's where I accepted evolution because they teach evolution there. They just teach it in a God-honoring way. And then in 1988, I was introduced to Father Thomas Berry, a Catholic monk who a teacher. He called himself a geologian, not a theologian, but a geologian. And he was sort of the next step after Teilhard de Chardin. And he became a mentor of mine in 1988. And so I essentially have been a Christian naturalist ever since. I don't have any supernatural or otherworldly beliefs. For me, I interpret all of the aspects of my Christian faith as undeniably real in a this world way, and am deeply inspired by that. But one of the things I'm really grateful for is that I've spoken to 2,000 groups over the last 12 years. And I think one of the reasons why my book was endorsed, my book, Thank God for Evolution, was endorsed by 6 Nobel Prize winning scientists, as well as by theologians and priests and rabbis and religious leaders, is because it gives voice not just to my ideas or Connie's and my ideas. It gives voice to this whole movement that I've begun calling the Evidential Reformation, Religion 3.0. You know, religion 1.0 is the authority of the elders. Religion 2.0 is the authority of scripture. Religion 3.0 is the authority of evidence, global collective intelligence. And so I can do the same exact program in virtually any setting, religious of all different kinds or secular. And I know from experience, because we used to hand out feedback forms, that, you know, something like 90% of the people who come to my programs are gonna love it, because we focus on the inspiring side of what's being revealed by God, by reality, evidentially. You could say the sacred side of science.
You did an interview recently with one of my public radio colleagues talking about these issues. And in the story that that station had on it, it pointed out that at least one member of the faculty of Evangel College claims your theology is not Christian.
Well, you know, Evangel College, it's interesting. They don't know quite what to do with me because, I graduated with, you know, like practically a 4.0 average. I think I got 1B. I'm sure I'm the only alum that has ever had a Nobel Prize winning scientist endorse their book, much less 6 of them. So they want to be proud of me. And yet they also, my theology is quite a bit more liberal than most of the, professors and students at Evangel College. I will say this, that my, I don't want to overstate, I said earlier that people across the religious and philosophical and theological spectrum are, embracing this message, but I don't want to overstate the case there because that doesn't include everybody. For example, Al Mohler, the president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, who's one of the go-to people in the media when they want a fundamentalist voice on something, he was asked to comment on a sermon that he had listened to of mine. And he said, he gave me my favorite criticism of all time. He said, "Michael Dowd gives even heresy a bad name." So I don't want to overstate that everybody thinks that my message is wonderful.
In the years that you've been traveling, speaking about these things, have you detected a surge in your direction, or is it going to be an ongoing conversation with those who don't accept what you say?
I think both. I've certainly seen over the last 12 years of traveling North America with Connie, my wife, who's a science writer, I've certainly seen, especially among young people, just a hunger for sort of interpreting what science is giving us in ways that are soul nourishing, that in ways that are inspiring, in ways that that help us live more integrous lives and have greater joy and be of service to our communities and to the future. So yes, I certainly have seen that. But again, I don't want to overstate. There's still certainly resistance to science. I mean, I read a book a couple of years ago that just angered me like nothing I've read in a long time. It was called "Fool Me Twice: Fighting the Assault on Science in America." It was by Sean Lawrence Otto. And books like that, and books like that really show how it is that science is being dissed by some of the postmodernists, as well as some of the religious right and the political right. I found myself feeling kind of like Muslims must feel when the Quran is dissed. You know, this rage, this righteous rage that for me, evidence is sacred. Evidence is holy. Facts are God's native tongue. And I've committed my life to helping to promote the inspiring side of an ecological evolutionary worldview. And that's what I'll be doing in Portage at the UCC Church.
Thanks so much for speaking with us.
Great. Thank you, Andy.
The Reverend Michael Dowd spoke via Skype with WMUK's Andy Robbins. Dowd will speak tomorrow night at Portage United Church of Christ. Links with more information can be found at WMUK.org.